Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Nall, and this is the Progressive Commentary Hour. Today, we're going to look at the enormous amount of interest we're now paying to sexual predators, such as the Weinstein. And my guest, who'll be on in about 5 minutes, is now in another country. She is doing a major investigation on this type of condition and why we have not spent time on it before. How serious is it? I want to begin by sharing a few words from Valerie Dovitz and Julie Brooks from The Conversation. They've written an article called "It's Not Just O'Reilly and Weinstein, Sexual Violence is a Global Pandemic." And here's what they say before we get into our conversation. The recent exposure of widespread sexual predation in the American media industry, from Harvey Weinstein to Bill O'Reilly, has elicited shock and sparked debate on violence against women in the United States. Sexual harassment isn't the exclusive domain of show business big shots. It remains alarmingly prevalent nationwide, even as other crimes are generally decreasing nationwide. In the United States, a study found 27% of college women reported some form of forced sexual contact, ranging from kissing to anal intercourse, after enrolling in school. This sexual violence is heavily underreported, with just 20% of female student victims reporting the crime to law enforcement. Nor is sexual harassment limited to the United States. The United Nations has called gender-based violence a global pandemic. As experts in emergency medicine and legal research at the Harvard Humanitarian Initiative, we believe it's important to acknowledge that this issue transcends national borders and class boundaries to touch the lives of roughly 33% of all women worldwide. According to the World Health Organization estimates, one in three women worldwide will experience either physical or sexual violence in her lifetime, many of them before the age of 15. In fact, for many rural women, their first sexual encounter will be forced. Some 17% of women in rural Tanzania, 21% in Ghana, 24% in Peru, 30% in Venezuela, and other countries such as Bangladesh. All of this is non-consensual. Intimate partner violence is also pervasive globally. In one World Health Organization study, 25% of women surveyed in cities in England, Mexico, Nicaragua, Peru, and Zimbabwe reported a boyfriend or husband had committed some form of sexual violence against them. Globally, up 55% of women murdered or killed by their partners. Violence against women takes many forms, ranging from psychological abuse to the kind of sexual predation, sexual assault, and rape allegedly committed by Harvey Weinstein. Honor killings, physical attacks, the killing of female babies, genital cutting, trafficking, forced marriages, and sexual harassment at work and school are also considered gender-based violence. Now, that's what they say. I believe that we should take a deep look at some of the women who are in positions of power, and therefore they are policymakers and they are able to impact other countries' behavior. What have they done to protect women? I'll give you just one example. One of the worst nations in the world, or countries in the world, is Saudi Arabia when it comes to the rights of women. Beheadings, beatings are common there. Women have few, if any, rights. It is a completely patriarchal society. Men rule. Well, why is it that we haven't made a condition to do business with them that they have to change their position when it comes to women's rights? Instead, as Secretary of State Hillary Clinton prided herself on having the first $100 billion contract for weapons manufacturers to sell planes and weapons of different types to Saudi Arabia, knowing full well the abuses against gays, killing them regularly, and not allowing any of their religion to be practiced in their country, and no women having the right to vote or having any rights. Why was this not examined? Why did we not have this discussion? Madeleine Albright, another Clinton friend, but also former UN ambassador and also former Secretary of State. And you look at other famous women around the world, in England and the United States, India. People have been prime ministers and presidents of their countries, and yet where was the women's agenda in their level of priorities? I also have to ask this question before we go to our guest. Would this be of interest today if this would have been any other male instead of a Harvey Weinstein, a Hollywood and political powerhouse? And why is it some men, like a Bill O'Reilly, are challenged for their sexual harassment or misconduct and allegations against them, but others, such as Bill Clinton, is never once challenged by the different feminist organizations or women of power in the United States? Why? Why the double standard? Isn't assault, sexual assault, or sexual violence of any kind, or sexual harassment, isn't all that equally repulsive and should never be tolerated? These are just some opening thoughts. We're going to go overseas now. I can't say which country. I'll simply say our guest is standing by to share some very important insights. She is Dr. Lori, that's L-O-R-I, Handrahan, H-A-N-D-R-A-H-A-N. She has been spending the last 20 years on humanitarian human rights work in Central Asia, Africa, and the Balkans. Her focus is gender-based violence and conflict and post-conflict environments, UN reform, and ending child sex abuse. She has worked with the UNHCR and the UN's Refugee Agency, and she is also its first gender expert in emergency operations during the Darfur genocide and its regional gender advisor in the Balkans, as well as CARES Girls Leadership Assessment. It was the lead evaluator in Yemen and the UN's FPA's Gender-Based Violence Information Management System and its lead evaluator in Uganda. She has completed her PhD at the London School of Economics and later taught at America University in Washington, D.C. Her work is published widely from academic journals. Also, she's appeared in the New York Times, Christian Science Monitor, Huffington Post, the Washington Times, Forbes, the National Journal, the Daily Beast, and other places. She has a book called Epidemic, America's Trade in Child Rape. And it was just made available this week by Trinde Books, and is a thorough, detailed investigation into the data and issues that has turned the U.S. into one of the world's leaders in child pornography and underage sex. And that's unfortunate. Nice to have you with us today, Lori.
Yeah, thank you very much for inviting me.
Lori, the United States, along with the Netherlands, are perhaps the largest networks engaging in child pornography and pedophilia and sexual crimes and harassment of underage boys and girls in the world. And our mainstream media will barely touch this epidemic for a variety of reasons, and I hope that we're going to get into them. And the cases of Harvey Weinstein and Jeffrey Epstein and the Franklin scandal that Nick Bryant has done, I believe, a remarkable research job, is only a small sample of examples of numerous other instances of sex with underage kids, and especially children as young as 2 and 3 years, and they go unmentioned and not noticed. And fortunately, the Weinstein scandal is blowing the lid off the problem and is finally getting some public attention. So I think we should begin by asking about the extent of the problem and how pervasive is it, and what part of American society are the main culprits of pedophilia, meaning the demographic of men and women who engage in pedophilia and who are the most likely victims, and How many kids under age are we speaking of who have been victims of sexual abuse by adults? I'm going to go on from there to deal with the adults and the celebrities and others who have claimed sexual assault and sexual harassment. But let's begin there. The form is yours.
Sure. It's a lot to respond to. So maybe I'll start, and then please feel free to interrupt me if I go on too long on one section. You began by mentioning that the U.S. and Holland are the global leaders in producing child rape and torture videos and images and photos, which is what child pornography is. There's quite a lot of people in the movement to end impunity for child sex abuse who don't want it to be called child pornography and also don't want it to be called child sex abuse, because they will say that sex is what consenting adults do. And what's happening to children is really very brutal rape and torture and extreme violence that meets the definition under the Convention Against Torture. If you take some time to read the criminal complaints of people who are arrested, you get very rich descriptions of their chat sessions, what they were trading in, what they were saying while they were trading this. And I've profiled some of those in my book, just to show people. And you're right. I mean, mainstream media has absolutely refused to report on this. What you do see is one-off arrests are covered in daily crime beat news reporting. So journalists will report so-and-so was arrested with 30,000 images of child pornography. And that's it. And that doesn't mean anything to anybody. Nobody knows what 30,000 images of child pornography means. But if the journalists actually got the criminal complaints and published these and reported on them, you know, the reader and the American public would see that Michael Morris, for instance, who was a dean at the University of Virginia, a tennis player, a father of two teenage children, was masturbating, one assumes. Often they will say when arrested that they do masturbate to this, and so you'll see that in the criminal complaint, to a six-year-old girl being raped at knife point. I think it was a four-year-old child held in a cage, which is very common, on campus and at his home. And this dean, Michael Morris at University of Virginia, was pretending to be 12 and 13, 14-year-old girls and boys on Facebook. He set up fake Facebook profiles to get other teenagers to masturbate and produce child pornography for him. So that particular case of Michael Morris, a dean at the University of Virginia, all of the Washington, D.C. and Virginia media covered his arrest because he was so prominent, but they all refused to report on what he was actually doing. So I'm sort of going off on a sideline, but you get a lot of empathy for the pedophiles, and you frequently see in the media reports that everybody was so shocked because he was such a nice man and he adored children. He was always around children, without the general public knowing what this person was doing, which was committing a horrific crime against very young children. You mentioned 1-, 2-, and 3-year-olds, so I have a whole section on infant and toddler rape in my book, because I was horrified to learn as I started to research this that under 4 years old is really platinum on the pedophile market. They love to rape children under four. And the reason for that is that children under four can't be legal witnesses in court. So it's a strategic choice for these men and increasingly women who are committing these horrific crimes against children. They can't talk. They can't be a legal witness. They also love to rape disabled children. A Down syndrome child can't be a witness in court. So they target children who cannot be witnesses so they can continue to perpetuate their crime. They also try to kill children and do kill children when they think they might testify. There was a very prominent case in Washington, D.C. about 5 or 6 years ago now. He was chair of the Democratic Party in Fairfax, Virginia. Such a lovely man, such a prominent man in the community. White, again, like most of the perpetrators are white men. And he had used his own children as bait, as many pedophiles do. And his 10th daughter had a birthday party, and she had a sleepover for her friend at her 10th birthday party. And he molested her friend, one of whom was her cousin, at the slumber party. And then from jail, he attempted to have those children killed, because if there's no witness, there's no crime, there's no crime, there's no prosecution. So these are just a few examples. I could go on for hours, unfortunately. The scope is massive. We're starting to see a lot more exposure. Just today, British papers, a British police officer and several people working on the crime came out, and they gave a talk, and they said that the amount of men who are trading in child rape, a.k.a. child pornography, in England is so epidemic, they're calling it a social emergency. So you are starting to see these words being used, but not yet in America. The Dutch National Police, just this year in their annual report, which came out in June and in August in English, said that child pornography is so massive in Holland, it's now a threat to Dutch society. I mean, you know, a threat to Dutch society, a social emergency. The Australian police came out and said that it's at epidemic levels, it's a pandemic. But so far, to my knowledge, my book is the first one that's saying it's an epidemic in America. I have seen a couple of local journalists call it an epidemic. One in Florida used that word. But I haven't seen any of the children's charities, any of the national police coming out and saying this in a way that sustains that the American public can really understand that it is. The former deputy director of the FBI, a man named Joseph Campbell, who has since retired, did come out in 2000, and I believe it was 15, in an interview with BBC, and he called it an epidemic. But he never did an interview with the American press. We asked to do an interview with him, and he had said yes, and then he subsequently was told that he couldn't do the interview, and now he's retired. So maybe somebody will interview him, and he'll speak freely.
Lori, in order for these men to be so active in underage sex, there needs to be a very sophisticated and organized network in place and many stopgaps in order to protect the guilty. What is the infrastructure that's in place that enables it to function? And since you are speaking of men who hold positions of power in private industry, the ones you've mentioned thus far, you haven't mentioned the entertainment industry or law enforcement, including judges and attorneys. I believe that one of the assistant attorney generals in California was just arrested on pedophilia in the last couple of days. You also have politicians. Okay. And you have other privileged elite. And how has the system been manipulated to protect them? And would it be true to say that they know each other, at least some, and therefore use their positions of influence to protect each other's as well? And then separately, this is not simply voyeurism. We're dealing with the exchange of money also, not just child porn sites, but also services offering sex with underage boys and girls. And then I want you to segue into Jeffrey Epstein, because Epstein didn't offer services for free. In fact, with Epstein, since I looked carefully at the files and listened to one of the victims, he was having sex frequently 3 times a day, every day, 7 days a week, for years. Hundreds of young women, generally 12 to 13, were involved. And yet, and this is where we get into the politics and having friends like the Clintons, how is it that anyone else who was not a billionaire and had those political connected friends could engage in having hundreds of victims, and yet he only is brought up on one single charge, allowed to do a halfway house, and then have his reputation cleaned up when someone else has spent the rest of their life in prison? And also, wasn't it President Clinton who went on many occasions to his Lolita Island, his island he owned, without the Secret mm-hmm. Service, so there were no official witnesses, and had a lot more trips on his flight that we were later found out by looking at the flight logs than what he claimed? And yet none of this was brought out during any challenge to Clinton. And then go further in Clinton himself. I interviewed at length Clinton's former mistress, his longest mistress, 29 years. And she was his childhood sweetheart right up through his marriage. And she said that when he was attorney general in Arkansas, Clinton bragged to her that he had already had 3,000 different sexual conquests, and that was 30 years ago. So what does it say about a nation where someone who has that kind of reputation and has had that many charges of rape and sexual assault or harassment, and nothing at all happens to him, not a single thing, and Jeffrey Epstein has such a light sentence compared to what he deserved, what does that tell you about the system we live in?
Yeah, I mean, I'm always surprised when these guys actually get caught and sentenced, because so many of them are not being caught or being protected. You know, law enforcement and prosecutors and judges, they're definitely all protecting each other. And then when they do get caught, because one brave prosecutor or one brave law enforcement refuses to stay silent, you know, they very often just get probation only. So you mentioned Epstein. I mean, I was at least thrilled that he was forced to register as a sex offender. The largest distributor of child pornography in the entire state of Pennsylvania, that's a pretty big number because there's a pretty large population, a lot of urban density in Pennsylvania. He was a police chief of a town. He got probation only, not a day in jail. So what does that say to you if your police chief in your town gets probation only for being the largest distributor of child rape videos and sex abuse? Who are you going to call? If you know your child's been raped or your child's being raped, can you call the police? No, you can't call the police. You can call some police. Sheriff Grady Judd in Florida, Polk County, Florida, he's amazing. So if you live in Polk County, Florida, okay, you're going to be protected. Your kid's going to be protected. You've got somebody to call. But if you live in Maine, as I happen to, where the police are very corrupt and heavily involved in protecting a pedophile ring that's been in place for quite a long time, Nick Bryan has talked about this as well, nobody will do anything about your claim. And even worse, whistleblowers and people who do come forward are destroyed. So again, if it's not a child who can't testify, it's not a disabled child, if you have a competent adult, what the prosecutors will say is, well, it's not a credible witness. She's not credible. And then, of course, if you're a woman, it's easy to say she made it up, she's crazy, she's a liar, she wanted attention. So that feeds into the whole rape culture in America. I think, you know, you asked about what does it say about our society, this impunity for child rapists. When you do look at the demographics, we don't, and my entire book is basically setting out a national research agenda, because we don't have the data, because nobody's been collecting the data. The Department of Justice isn't collecting the data. Law enforcement isn't collecting the data. No academics are collecting the data. And so that's what I sort of set out. Like, we need a national child pornography database so that we know everybody's been arrested, what their positions were, what they were sentenced to, you know, so we can actually have good public policy. But some of the data that we do have is from the U.S. Sentencing Commission. It's already old. It's from 2012. And in that data, 80 to 90% every year of people who were arrested and prosecuted for child pornography were white men. That's a staggering statistic. I mean, in any other crime, to have that kind of concentration of a gender and an ethnic group or race, you know, you would sort of have an outcry. And then when you look deeper into some of the smaller studies that have been done, like the Associated Press did a really incredible research, year-long research investigation into child sex abuse in the military. And what they found when they started looking at cases was, over and over and over again, the profile of the predator who was caught, these are the ones that are caught, it wasn't the entry-level military guys. It was always the elite. It was always the sergeants, the commanders, the colonels, the top guys. They were raping their own children, or they were raping children of friends that they could get their hands on. You know, so you see that again and again. I look, you mentioned police. I have a whole section on police. I have national law enforcement, federal law enforcement, and local law enforcement. So when I started to look at police, and I had to have a whole section just for police chiefs, because it's not the officer on the beat. It's the police chiefs I mean, I think I had counted 10 police chiefs before I stopped counting because I just couldn't keep up anymore. So, yeah, and they do know each other. What, one of the things that I often say to people who ask me about the crime, this is not a crime that people are trying to cover up. They don't do this crime alone and not tell anybody. Pedophiles want everybody to know that they're raping children. The minute that they rape a child, they're videoing it, they're live streaming it, they're photographing it, and then they're posting it and bragging about what they've done to these children, right? So they're telling the world. And that's just online. They also obviously meet in person. So if you've read a lot of criminal complaints like I have for the book, what you now see, and this is sort of just in the last 2 years that I started to see this, is the criminal complaints will say that the law enforcement officer was undercover and went on a pedophile chat and pretended to be a father who had custody of his child. So this was a case in Washington, D.C. Washington, D.C. police officer recently undercover. He got a military guy who was up for military training. And the guy says, you know, I'm looking for somebody who's willing to share their children. And the police chief saying, yeah, well, this is my, I forget if whether it was a son or daughter in that one, but this is my child. I have custody. I'm willing to share her or him for rape. So then they meet and they share the children that they have access to. So particularly when you're in smaller communities and not big urban areas, you're in a small town in, say, Portland, Maine, you know, the judges all know each other, the prosecutors all know each other, the police all know each other, and the pedophiles all know each other because they're sharing the children they have access to, and they're protecting each other. And that was one of the very first articles I did on this subject was in Forbes magazine, where I said that I've documented in Maine and Vermont the clergy and the prosecutors, lawyers, the cops, child protection, they're running a ring. They're all protecting each other. I naively thought that if I got something like that into Forbes, somebody at DOJ, the Department of Justice, or the Federal Bureau of Investigations would call me up and say, hey, thanks for alerting us. We didn't know. We'll go now take down this ring and save those children. I literally thought, okay, my job's over. I've got this in Forbes. Okay, it's all going to be good now. So that was the very beginning of a very long journey, which has resulted in this point in this book. And I'm really grateful that you're interested and that you're willing to have me on the show to talk about it. Thank you.
Lori, most of your research and private investigations during the past decade have focused on child sex offenders in our national security apparatus, which includes the professions that I mentioned earlier. Mm-hmm. And one official in the Department of Defense reported that the amount of child porn on government computers is unbelievable. Now, since you've gone through many court records to distill the extent of the problem and the character of a white male in a position of power who engages in child sex, will you share some examples that are the most glaring and have not received any public attention?
Sure. Yeah, it's a great question. So that was Daniel Payne who said that, who's the head of the Pentagon Defense Security, DSS, it's called Department of Defense Security Unit or something like that. And he said that last year, and it only, you know, got a little blip in the news. The only journalist who followed up on it was with any kind of depth was a Christian Science Monitor journal who then tried to FOIA all the government agencies to find out how many government employees have been arrested for child pornography. She did a very good job detailing. A lot of the agencies just refused to answer the FOIA, you know, full stop. And then Daniel Payne just came out about a month ago, again in D.C. at a conference, and he said that child pornography, this isn't a direct quote, but the gist of what he said was child pornography is a national security threat, because he said that he is actually hiring people who are convicted felons, you know, who have been already convicted for child pornography and are on sex offenders registries are getting security clearance because he said they're not doing proper jobs with the security clearance. So we're giving convicted pedophiles high-level security clearance. So Daniel Payne has now come out and said this twice. And the second time, the one just recently, Time Magazine did follow up on it. But that's it. So you see these little blip and then it's over. There was a lot of noise, which you probably followed with Operation Flicker, which was ICE's operation. And that got on Anderson Cooper and CNN some years ago, where was over 5,000 guys in the Pentagon, top-level guys, using their military emails and their credit cards in their own name, were purchasing child pornography. And, you know, that all got hushed up and pushed under the rug. I think the case that really shocked me, and, Gary, as I keep researching, I keep thinking, well, I can't be more shocked than I am now. I mean, surely this is as bad as it gets, right? And then the next day I'll see a new arrest, and it just blows me away. So David O'Brien was the head of our nuclear security watch program down in Florida at Patrick Air Force Base. So he was in charge. He was the top nuclear scientist in the country. And he was in charge of monitoring any kind of activity around the world, you know, that would be important to protect American citizens. And he was trading in child rape on U.S. Air Force computers and his personal computer, and including on Russian websites. So the other element of child pornography is that it is heavily dominated by organized crime. You know, it is a powerful organized crime syndicated network, and you participate in that when you participate in child pornography. So not only is he doing something that's just incredibly abhorrent, but he's opened up U.S. Air Force and America's most sensitive computer networks, monitoring nuclear activity around the world, to Russian organized crime. You know, I mean, so it's just sort of mind-blowing. Now, in that case, again, nobody covered it at the national level. I reached out to so many journalists thinking that somebody would be horrified about this and want to do an in-depth investigation. It got covered in the local press in Florida, but that was about it. And that was a very interesting case because there is no national database, it's very hard even for the professional to track them. So law enforcement and prosecutors often don't know what happens to cases, so which is extremely detrimental to their professional ability. So in this case, it was a local sheriff's office who arrested him, and then the state-level charges were dropped in lieu of federal charges. And sometimes the state will concurrently pursue their own charges. Sometimes they'll drop them. But when I was trying to track down what happened to him, you know, the local sheriff's office asked me to let them know because they hadn't followed the case and they were interested to see if the guy got jail time. And I finally ended up talking to the U.S. prosecutor's office who handled that, and I got the criminal complaint, which was horrific. He had also taken pictures of his own granddaughter and cut out her face, or manipulated it on the computer and put her face over images of children being brutally raped and tortured. So, you know, he's fantasizing about doing that to his own granddaughter, which a lot of men, a lot of grandfathers, you know, are caught doing. I mean, actually raping their grandchildren. So when I talked to the DOJ public affairs person, they were thrilled that I had even called to ask about the criminal complaint because they thought this case was a big deal. They put a lot of time and effort into it. They wrote a really great criminal complaint. He got 5 years, and they said, you know, they couldn't believe that CNN and then the national media hadn't picked it up. So, and that's just one. I mean, that's just one of hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of cases.
Lori, I want to shift gears now. It was about 10 years ago that I first had Nick Bryan on the program. He had written a book about the Philadelphia episode, and he brought a person on the program that we had independently interviewed and confirmed that she was being honest. She had so many details, so many documents, and this involved some boys from Boys Town, the famous Boys Town, and she was also involved where she would be sent to Washington, D.C. or other places to sexually service people who were very prominent Republicans, and nothing ever happened. She knew their names. She knew the offices. She was even given a tour of the White House once by one of these people. And so these were at the top of the political spectrum. They had a lot of people who could defend them. So nothing ever happened to any of these people. At the same time, in England, we had multiple allegations against people within Prime Minister Heath's administration, including him, top-level cabinet members who were engaged in pedophilia, and even the alleged murder of one of the individuals. And not one of those people was held accountable. And yet there was overwhelming evidence. In fact, one of the police who were interviewed, and in fact an inspector, said that that they were told to stand down when they got too close to certain people. That now comes out later, after almost all these people are dead, that a leading personality on the BBC for 45 years was sexually abusing young boys and girls. We also had that the Catholic Church knew and covered up tens of thousands of cases of rape of young boys and girls.
Yeah.
And in fact, not only did the former pope, not the current pope, but the former pope, whose place he took, was then cardinal and ran the Vatican, but actually would get people, priests, out of parishes and whisk them away to the Vatican. And as a sovereign nation, they could then not be held accountable and then sneak them into different places where they would never be seen again and hence could not be prosecuted. And so it wasn't a year or two or 10. It had been gone on for over 75 years. So now when it first broke, people were shocked. And yet now when we look back, no one should have been shocked because these were open secrets. In fact, there's a very important movie done with Michael Keaton and others just a couple years ago where the Boston Globe had a group of reporters who exposed this. And they were the first to break this wide open. Now we see it was worldwide. And we think, wow, how did that happen? A friend of mine was one of the most prominent people in Hollywood for over 40 years, just retired. And another friend of mine was a prominent financier, one of the what they call the A-list financiers, the person that actually puts the money into films. Both were very close personal friends. And I used to go out to California a lot. I was on the radio out there for over 35 years on KPFK every week for 6 hours. But I also did a lot of television out there with Regis Philbin and others from the 1970s, from 1972 on until just 4 years ago when I just stopped going. And I would hear how sexually, sexually aggressive everything in Hollywood was. I was told, for example, by multiple sources that there's a large sexual predators, mainly gay men who are extremely powerful, including running studios, the same power as Harvey Weinstein, but bigger studios. And that is one of the worst kept secrets in Hollywood. Everybody knew about it. And yet the idea was they would like teenage boys and 13, 14, 15, but all underage. Therefore, when having sex with these boys would end up being classified as pedophilia. And because you did not dare challenge these people because they knew everyone, they were all connected to the democratic machine, to the media, you would be destroyed, your reputation would be destroyed. When now we're up to Harvey Weinstein, and here's a man that is alleged to have operated with complete impunity, ejaculating in a restaurant into a plant when someone wouldn't have sex with him, assaulting people, raping people. It bothers me that the entire community knew this was going on because there were thousands of other people doing the same thing. This is not new. My friends, Hedy Lamarr, Gloria Swanson, many of the original stars of Hollywood said it was going on then as well. And the fact that we would allow that environment to exist, but suddenly he's the only person that's being looked at when this is permeating every level of the Hollywood community and the entertainment community. The fashion industry is it's endemic. The music industry, it's endemic. And yet suddenly we're shocked. We're shocked when we find out that there's sexual predation, these predators. And yet we take a few as examples, and then they say, okay, been there, done that, now let's go on with our lives. No, we shouldn't. Could you give us your analysis of what is the Harvey Weinstein phenomena, the Hollywood music industry and fashion industry phenomena, where sex for play to pay and sex for career advancement, or having sex or asking for sex, even when it's rejected, you feel you have the power to get away with it, how we have not dealt with this earlier?
Yeah, I mean, these are all really great questions, Gary. So I'm a real East Coast girl. I mean, I'm sort of Washington, D.C., up to Maine, and that's about, and then overseas. I've only even been to California once, and that was a week in San Francisco about 20 years ago. So I don't know that culture at all. But it's the same. I mean, in my opinion, it doesn't matter if it's the military or academic environments, universities and colleges, police, law enforcement, or Hollywood, entertainment, music, fashion. Somebody had said, and this is frequently, you know, said in trafficking conferences that I go to, poor people don't buy sex. I mean, you know, it's the rich who can afford to purchase sex slaves. And you'll hear people say that. They want a sex slave. They're trying to purchase a sex slave. And so it's very wealthy, very elite, very powerful men, although you are starting, unfortunately, to see more women involved. On the Hollywood Weinstein thing, what I will say I was really pleased with was that Corey Feldman is coming forward. I don't know if you've followed that development in the last 2 days. So when I saw the Harvey Weinstein, you know, on Twitter, of course, I was pleased that Me Too took off and people are coming forward. But on my Twitter feed, it's mainly child sex abuse survivors and people fighting child sex abuse. And everybody was saying, what about all the children? I mean, okay, it's not great what Weinstein did. And that's, you know, I feel sorry for those adult women. And obviously that was damaging to them. But what about the children who are being raped? Nobody's talking about that. So a lot of people started saying to Corey Feldman, come forward, come forward, come forward. So he, I think it was yesterday or the day before, he said, okay, I'm going to come forward and let's raise money and I'll produce a documentary on this. So I think he's raised something like $100,000 in the first few hours that he launched that. And that to me is really great because he, again, when he came forward before with Barbara Walters, was smeared and dismissed and marginalized. These people don't want to go to jail, so they will do anything it takes to make sure that they don't go to jail. And if you have a man who's willing to rape a child, he's willing to do just about anything. So that's what I tell people, why people stay silent is they're scared. You know, they don't want to lose everything. They don't want to lose their house. They don't want to lose their career. They don't want their children to be harmed. So I think the people who come forward, in my opinion, I mean, what's happened to me is absolutely everything has been taken from me. So I have nothing to lose by staying silent. Now, maybe if somebody had said to me, we won't touch your own child, you know, if you stay silent, I would have stayed silent. You know, once everything's taken, what have I got to lose? So I watched Corey Feldman's video that he just put up. And of course, you know, he has a lot to lose. He has his children, he's in a good marriage. Well, from what I can see from public accounts, he's, you know, well off, he all of these. But he said that his band's been canceled, that he thinks there's attempts on his life. He was arrested for marijuana. So they're already starting to try to harass him. But he said, I'll give it all up. I don't care. I want to fight this issue. I want to tackle this. So I think also psychologically, when you get to the point where you're like, okay, I don't care what I have to lose, because what he said is, I've been living in fear, you know, my whole life because of this, and I'm going to come forward now. And that's, you know, the only thing that's going to change the culture is if everybody who knows that children are being raped comes forward in their town, in their community, in their city. And so it's not just the Harvey Weinsteins and the Jeffrey Epsteins. It's your local lawyer in your small little town in Iowa, you know, who gives all the money to the children's playground and is the volunteer ice hockey coach and is the Boys and Girls Club guy, the guy who you think loves children. You know, this is who it is. They always put themselves in positions of authority and access to children. So we need to stop being afraid. And this is what I end my book with. I mean, as long as adults continue to say, I'm too scared to protect a child, I think our country is doomed. You know, I mean, how can it be that we've become a nation of adults who says over and over and over again, I'm an adult, but I'm too scared to protect a five-year-old, you know?
Well, we know that Hollywood is very sexually charged environment, but I'm also very concerned to the extent of sexual harassment and manipulation and sex with underage kids. And in the film and television industry, I have been watching the information on Corey. And he specifically says that these were gay men, including the head of a studio, currently the head of a studio, who were involved. I think he said there's six. He wanted to raise $10 million. Well, it doesn't take $10 million to do a documentary. I don't know what his budget is based upon, unless he intends to distribute the film himself, but they can block that very easily. And mm-hmm. that group has never been mentioned, not once. And I mm-hmm. know the I know the names of those people. I do not have the hard proof. But if they are exposed, everybody's attention would shift to Harvey Weinstein in a moment, because these mm-hmm. are leading philanthropists. These are people whose names are on major buildings. And then the question is, how in the world did they get away with this for the last 30 to 40 years? And the same way that Harvey Weinstein, the same way that so many people who are powerful or perceived to be powerful are able to use that mm-hmm. power to manipulate. But I think we have to ask a larger question. Set aside the sex with children, which no one should ever judge except deplorable. But if you're an adult and you choose a career in a field, the first time someone says or does anything inappropriate is when you should report that person.
Yep.
And you
yep.
shouldn't wait because it somehow you think it'll be adverse to your career. Because right. if they're doing it to you, they're doing it to everyone else.
Absolutely.
And that's the bad part of it. And also the double standards. If we mm-hmm. really care about women, shouldn't we care about the women who've come forward and accused Bill Clinton of rape? And there are many of mm-hmm. them. And wasn't it true mm-hmm. that Bill Clinton paid an $800,000 settlement for a rape claim? And wasn't true he's mm-hmm. lost his law license? In fact, both have lost their law license. Isn't it mm-hmm. true that there were he's bragged to his own lover that he had 3,000 sexual conquests? Well, how many of those were consensual, and how many of right. those were rape? We mm-hmm. don't know. And a lot of people are mm-hmm. afraid. They're terrified of the Clintons because they see what happens when you come up against the Clintons. Mm-hmm. So our whole society right now needs a We need an honest evaluation of where we're at and how we got here. And I don't believe that we mm-hmm. have a media willing to do that, because so many people in the media are connected socially or politically or ideologically mm-hmm. or financially to people who themselves are complicit. Your thoughts?
Right, or people in the media are complicit themselves. So you probably saw that Mark Halperin has now been named, and he's MSNBC asked him to leave. That wasn't children. Those are adults. So, you know, and you do see quite a few arrests of journalists for child pornography. So, yeah, I mean,
but that,
at this point,
when he was at ABC, that was when Mark Halperin was ABC, a top executive. And there he did all this. Well, why is it we're just finding out about what he did at ABC and
right.
not when he was at ABC? And why is
right.
it we only found
right.
out about Bill O'Reilly settling for a total of $45 million that we know of. $40 million
right.
is a lot of money to settle for. And
yep.
by the Megyn Kellys. Well, Megyn, if you cared more about women, then you should have gone mm-hmm. outside with a big sign and got the other women saying, we're boycotting Fox, even if it costs us our contract, because there's sexual predation in this building, including from, and then list the people, Roger Ailes, the head of the network, Bill O'Reilly, et cetera. I didn't see any of that. After
no.
you sign it, you know, you continue to accept $20 million contracts at the same time you say mm-hmm. there's sexual harassment. There's a contradiction in humanistic values there, at least from my perspective.
Absolutely.
Your thoughts?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I totally agree with you, Gary. I mean, I have a sentence in the book where I say that pedophiles know that most people are cowards, and in fact, they count on it. You know, so you often see the pedophile profiles that I've reviewed, they tend to be incredibly aggressive people. They act like bulldogs, you know, to scare everybody away. So they go after people in a vicious way, and people back down, and people get scared, you know. And they also tend to build consciously very prestigious careers. So another for which protect their lifelong crimes, as you said before, it's not just one child or two child, it's 200, you know, what a pedophile will do over the course of his lifetime or her lifetime, if they're allowed to. It's unbelievable the numbers of lives that get destroyed. But when I started to look at doctors who'd been arrested, you can probably guess which category, and I don't have the hard data. Nobody does. Again, I would love to be able to tell you exactly how many doctors within a certain time period, but it was not just pediatricians, but it was heads of pediatric oncology units at prominent hospitals. So Hershey's Hospital, Boston's Children's Hospital, Anderson in Texas, the one in Texas. I mean, and, you know, again, at first I was horrified. Like, imagine your child has cancer and you think that this is a great children's cancer ward. And, you know, you find out the head of the oncology unit got arrested for, you know, hundreds and of child pornography, rapes, and videos and images. And, of course, if you're thinking like a pedophile, dead children can't be witnesses. So what child do you want to put yourself in a position of power over? A child who's terminally ill, right? So, you know, how many children in at the Hershey's Children's Hospital where their head of the oncology department, pediatric oncology, was arrested, how many of those children have been raped by the guy and took that to their grave? We don't know. But I bet it was a lot. So you see that you see this kind of a profile over and over and over again, and then everybody on the side of the good. There's a lot of cowards out there, you know, a lot of people willing to look the other way. And I suppose there always has been. That's why we have genocides. That's why we had the Holocaust, the Rwanda genocide. You know, people walk away. Most people don't stand in the face of the storm and say, I'll protect this child.
Also, it has to do with hubris and has to do with intentional disinterest. We can desensitize ourselves to the suffering of others. And my final comment on this is that we also broadcast over the Pacifica Radio Network, and for years and years, the worst kept secret of Pacifica was that there was massive sexual predation and harassment. And the second largest amount of money paid each year was for sexual people who had filed lawsuits because management, people within Pacifica, had sexually assaulted them. This was in all the different stations. And I remember I actually interviewed one of the people involved who was a station manager. And I said, you should resign. You should leave and then prove your innocence. And if you can prove your innocence, then be reinstated with loss of back pay. But if not, I'm going on the air having to raise money, and I'm going to refuse to do that. And I did. I refused to. I told program director, I'm not going to raise money when that money is going to go to pay the legal bills and payouts. And in time, that person left. But not that they were reprimanded, not that they got a bad rap.
No.
There are people still we've settled lawsuits for people who are still working in Pacifica. So if you're going to do a show on sexual predation in Hollywood or pedophilia or in the Army or anywhere else, you better take a careful look at the so-called liberal media, because it's up to his eyeballs in hypocrisy, because it's engaged in it and found. And what would it be like if you went on the air to raise money saying, please send your money to support this station because we have a lot of sexual harassment lawsuits and we have sexual predators that we're protecting and we don't intend to fire them. So we want to pay their legal bills. People are going to say, no, I'm not going to do that. That's also the culture in Pacifica as well.
Yeah.
And one station in particular that that I refuse to allow, I do not raise any money for that station. I refuse to appear as a guest on that station. Unless they want to debate me on this topic, then I'm happy to appear. Bring forth the person who has lost sexual lawsuits and have them debate me live on the air. That would be good radio. They won't do that.
Right. Yeah, no. Yeah.
So, but Lori, again, I'm used to this.
Yeah. It's not just, again, it's a, you know, it's across every professional industry. So I have a whole chapter on educators in my book, and they call it Pass the Trash. So particularly at secondary and primary level, and USA Today actually did a really good year-long investigative piece. I think they got over a million court records and documents and things, very extensive, on child sex abuse by teachers in the public schools across America. And over and over and over again, everybody knew what the guy was doing for a long time before the school was forced to actually deal with him, and then they would quietly let him go with a glowing letter of recommendation so he could become somebody else's problem, so he could go on to rape more children. You know, it's absolutely appalling, and they literally call it pass the trash. So you talk about the hypocrisy. I mean, again, I couldn't agree with you more, Gary. As somebody I've been a liberal feminist my whole life, and I feel entirely betrayed by the so-called liberal progressive feminist community because they are not touching this issue at all. They have refused to touch it.
They're the ones who supported Hillary Clinton.
Yeah.
How can any feminist support Hillary Clinton?
No courage out of any of these women's rights groups or children's rights groups in Washington, D.C., none of them. Amnesty International is now saying that, you know, the entire sex industry should be decriminalized, right? I mean, it's just mind-boggling.
Well, Lori, let me leave with one final thought.
Yes.
If you were Secretary of State, I'm sure three things you would have said that not just Saudi Arabia, but the entire Middle Eastern community. One, you will give the same rights to women that any civilized nation gives, and to gays. No more killing gays, no more beheading people, no more allowing a woman who has been raped to be considered the victim and beating her and lashing her, and stop mm-hmm. dealing in sex slaves from the Balkans and other places, because mm-hmm. one of the largest areas where sex slaves are sent by mm-hmm. organized crime in the Balkans, you start dealing with the Romanian mob, the Bulgarian mob, you're dealing with the lowest scum on earth. Right? And these guys make the Russian mob look like Shirley Temple. These are rough players. And we're talking about hundreds of thousands of people who have been involved, if not millions, in being taken in India and in Bangladesh mm-hmm. and in Pakistan, mm-hmm. where their daughters mm-hmm. are sold off. It's a crime against humanity. And if you really cared, you'd stand up for them, not just, oh, how much weapons are you going to buy? Buy enough weapons and we'll see to it that you get on the UN, United Nations Human Rights Commission. I mean, it's insane. No real feminist would do anything with these countries except get in their face and tell them, grow up, act like human beings, and stop abusing women in your own society and stop allowing the princes there to buy women as if they're nothing more than a loaf of bread. And I have yet to see that by any of the top women. You ambassadors, Nikki Haley, wouldn't be intelligent enough to even understand how to spell Saudi Arabia and go there. But Hillary Clinton, that's a different matter. Mm-hmm. Your final thoughts?
Yeah, no. Yeah. I mean, absolutely. I was in Saudi Arabia once for a few weeks, so yeah, and did some human rights reporting and articles on women's human rights in Saudi Arabia, which are deplorable and horrific. Although, I guess my final thought is that I have a really difficult time criticizing any other culture or any other country when America has been producing for years half of the world's child rape and child sex abuse videos and images, you know, and that's America. So I say let's clean up our own backyard before we point our finger anyplace else. It's always easy to say, look at those people over there. And I'm reading that, you know, one-year-olds are being anally raped, you know, while they're chained to a swing or handcuffed or, you know, the stuff that is in these criminal complaints is horrific. And it's by respectable men who you think, I think, the general public thinks are really great guys, you know? So once we stop producing half the world's child pornography, I'd be more than happy to criticize anybody else's human rights record. And that's, you know, I used to be very internationally focused on that kind of outward critique. You know, half of those servers are based in America. We've known that for decades. That's public information. Europol, the European police, have reported on that. The British press have covered it. Not one journalist in America ever reported that half of the servers distributing child pornography globally are based in America. How come we can't even get any media on that? And why won't we shut them down? We know where they are. The European police know where they are. They've put them in their public reports. And the U.S. government has refused to shut those servers down. Shut the servers down. You know?
My guest, Dr. Lori Handrahan, Handrahan, she is the author of a very important book called Epidemic, America's Trade in Child Rape. Thank you very much for being with us today, Lori.
Yeah, thank you so much for the good work that you do and your courage, Gary. I really appreciate being on your show.
I want to thank everyone for listening. Look forward to sharing more tomorrow. Have a nice day.
Mother, there's too many of you crying. brother, brother, brother.